My name is Sebastian from Critical Rabbit. We made Fall of Porcupine, and you're listening to the Scene World podcast.
Perfect.
Hey, it's the Scene World podcast. I'm me. He's him. This is this. So we're doing it again. Yeah.
Yep. And in a minute, we will be talking to Vitaly Sperling, who is the game system designer for a company called Soul Portion, and they are actually working on Asgard's Fall.
Yeah.
And we will be talking about that. But before, though, we have some news.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Shall I start?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. The number one news, I think, that is out is that our very own Andrew Fisher is writing Commodore Nightmares. It's a book about C64 games, terrible C64 games specifically. And they had a Kickstarter in which they were, I think, hoping to raise, let me take a look.
Had?
Yeah. What's that? Had, yeah. Had? It only lasted like 6 days.
Ooh.
And it was, they were looking to get £6,000 British, and they ended up getting over 25,000 in 6 days.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that was funded in a minute. They had a stretch campaign of £22,000, and if they matched that, then they were going to add 40 pages to the book, and they passed that pretty easily.
That explains why I missed it.
Mm.
6 days? Ooh, yeah. That's short.
Yeah, it was very quick.
But of course, it means it will be released after that, I hope.
Yes. It said, let me see if I can see where. Let's see. FAQ. There's nothing yet. Yeah, it's supposed to get to backers before August.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
So I should email Andrew if I can still get a copy.
Yeah, apparently it's already it's written already. Mostly the funding was for printing, was for getting it out there. So.
Nice.
So yeah, I backed it. I'll be getting an autographed copy.
Nice. Well, yeah. I will message him if he can include me, because I totally missed that. Wow.
Yeah, it was quick. Like I looked at it and there were a couple of days. It was like 5 days left when I saw it first, and it said it's only going to run for a short time. And there were almost 1,000 backers. Made $25,000 or £25,000.
That explains why I didn't receive any notifications of anybody else backing for it.
Yeah.
Because obviously, in my cycle, nobody else did apart from you. It's just weird because I'm friends with a lot of retro people on Kickstarter, but I guess they missed it too.
I guess so, yeah.
Ooh.
Mm.
Okay. Well,
Check that out. Yeah, that'll be coming out pretty soon. That is going to be released by Fusion Retro Books.
Chris.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. Chris Wilkins.
Nice.
So
nice guy. Nice guy.
Yeah, so that'll be coming out soon. Also, awesome. The X 2024 demo party was held in Sommeren in the Netherlands. And the top demo in the competition was a C64 demo. It was 13 minutes 37 seconds by Fairlight.
Well, that's a long one.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that's how long the actual demo is, but yeah, about that long, yeah.
Nice.
Of course, that's, Leet, 1337. But,
Fairlight is a big name.
Yeah, it is. And it's nice to see a C64 demo taking the top prize again.
I mean, the X Party is C64 only.
Is it?
That's what the X Party is known for.
Well, okay. I haven't been to the X Party.
It's the only demo scene party where you only have C64.
There you go. There you go then.
Yeah.
Well, that makes it slightly less impressive, but still, it's a good demo. It's a really good demo.
Oh, God.
Also, check out the second and third place layers by Finnish Gold, Dust Boot by Lethargy.
There's nice.
Just a lot of good demos, a lot of stuff.
Nice. None of them anti-C fixed.
Well, you never know. I always used to, you know, I had my NTSC 64 and I'd always download the PAL demos and see how much I could get through it. You know, a lot of them would make it pretty far. Like I remember getting, what was the big, was it Crestology or something? The big Crest demo back in the 90s. That played pretty good on it. Some things were a little slow, some things were a little bit flickery, but it got probably 3/4 of the way through before it couldn't get to the next page for some reason.
You mean fast, because the demo
would faster. No, because sometimes it would kind of like stutter up and then it would play super slow because it was...
Because the timing is off.
Right, yeah, the timing was
off. Yeah. Well,
but
I mean...
For the most part, it played... You know, for the most part, you could get through it and you could see what was going on. It just was kind of a little off, but it was still impressive, even you know, though some of the things were glitchy.
Well, I mean, many people to this day wouldn't even believe that it is a big issue. It is! I was once from a German eBayer, a retro seller, gifted Rocket Ranger NTSC.
Yeah.
It crashes on PAL NES instantly. Doesn't even boot.
Yeah.
And I also got the NTSC version of World Games from Epix because the European version I couldn't get a hold of. And in the diving stage, it simply crashed because of timing issues.
Right.
And then it's probably not getting enough raster cycles anymore. And then the game simply crashes. Like, whoop, crash.
Yeah.
So it is a thing, especially as a set for demos and for more advanced games that rely on accurate timing.
Yeah, some of these demos, you know, because it's so because they're so involved and so, you know, there's so much stuff going on in them, you really can't NTSC fix them because that would make them not work anymore.
Also true.
You might be able to NTSC fix them, but you can't NTSC and PAL fix them.
Yeah, I mean, that's the difference actually for games. You know, back in the first market, when there was still a commercial market for games for the Commodore 64, your company would do very badly financially if it were like, oh, this game is so complex, we can't fix it for the other regions. So
yeah.
that would mean a whole market breaks away, actually, which would mean a financial hit. And that is something none of those companies would actually appreciate. That is why games have been NTSC fixed, even though sometimes the music wasn't fixed. It was just fixed enough, though the game doesn't crash.
Right.
Anyway, other news. Speaking about games, Prague Studio, which we had a while ago, announced their new game, Data Man, which is a game created by Dark Bits, Olaf Nessen, Per Larsen, and Ted Steen. And this game features 2-player co-op mode, a multi-directional shooter for the NES, protect the central processing unit from hordes of attacking miners, and kill evil corrupt bosses.
Okay.
And also, other news, JamGG released one of their original games on Steam, Arsene Bomber. And it's their own take on Bomberman. It's a Bomberman clone with some different locations and game modes.
What's it called?
Arsene Bomber. Yep.
How do you spell that first part?
Arsene.
Okay. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That retro style of graphics, it's not really retro because it's colors and stuff that would never be there.
I know.
Yeah. And?
But I got myself a copy. It's pretty fun.
Okay.
And also, other news is the Debug 5 magazine has been released.
Okay.
And also, there is a recap and videos from presentations of the VCF so-called 2024, who we interviewed a few episodes ago about their VCF event. So links to that also in the podcast description.
I missed VCF East this year. It happened earlier in April, and I did not even realize.
Ooh, well, that's how life can be a challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, other news is also MacCat Studios released Sacred Line 1 and 2 for the Mega Drive, which is interesting because both games are text adventures with graphics, you know, and there are horror adventures. And the interesting thing is that Sacred Line 1 was actually originally published by Watermelon Games.
Okay.
But as we interviewed them twice, we know that they totally didn't do the publishing business anymore besides their own games. That means for a long, long time, you couldn't get a Sacred Line 1 anymore except for a digital copy to purchase from the author's website. Right. So now they found a new home and a follow-up of the game with Mega Cat Studios in the US. That's nice. So if you missed it back in the days, you know, before 2017, now you can get the game, the follow-up, and the original both again as a physical release. Nice. If I'm not mistaken, yes, it's also true. Watermelon Games made different editions of many games releases. Sometimes you could get, you know, cartridge only in a blister box, or with a normal Mega Drive box or Genesis box. And I guess this game, if I don't remember it wrong, was actually only available as a sole cartridge release in a blister. So anyway, that's nice. It's always nice to see that aftermarket games rarely get republished when they find a new publisher.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, it's nice to see. Yeah, I mean, that would be actually all my news I have right now.
That's all I've got.
Nice. So, let's jump to Germany and talk to our guest, right? Okay. Bye-bye. So, today we have another guest, and today it's actually Vitali Sperling from Soul Potion. And he is actually a game system designer. And we will be talking today about the game Asgard's Fall.
Correct.
So, welcome to the show, Vitali.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming. So, actually, you said it briefly before the interview. on Steam, it's actually called Asgard's Fall Origin because it's kind of a demo version. And yes. I played the game a bit, and inside the game, it actually says that the full version is coming soon. So it's kind of a look out what to expect in the full game.
Yes, of course. The main reason we did this is because of wish lists, of course. People can get an idea how the game feels, if they like it, like the basic structure of the game. Of course, it will be much more systems and so on later on in the full version. And you can already see the Steam entry for the full version also on Steam. So because we link to this one for wishlisting, of course. And we had like a small event for people to win a Steam Deck with our publisher and so on. So we tried to do everything we could to gather some wish lists.
Wow. Yeah. Which is good for AJ because he's the Mac guy in our team.
Yeah.
Wonderful, yeah.
Yeah. We always harass our guests. Mac version?
Yeah, Mac version is also in the works. So we had a few people who wanted a Mac version on our Discord. We set up a Discord where we invited a few people. We have like a closed tester people. They were very loyal and reported a lot of bugs, feedback, and so on. So
nice. Yeah. Nice. So let's start with the question as we usually start with our guests. How did you get in touch with computer, and how did you decide in the end to be involved in the video game industry?
The first contact was, I think, when I was 7 or 8 or something. We migrated from Kazakhstan to Germany, and my dad one day came to me with a Nintendo Entertainment System, like the very first gray box, right? And it was like magic for me, of course. You put something in and you can control a little guy who jumps on mushroom people, Super Mario, right? That was very nice for me. And it was also like some core memories and so on. And on that day, I got hooked and like got N64 and so on. I was more like of a Nintendo person, not really the PlayStation person. And all the way up to, I think it was Wii U or something. And then I was old enough to go study and so on. And I think with 16 or 17 or 18, I decided, okay, I wanted to do something with games. I looked for a university which provided that, but at that time in Germany, you didn't really have much choice, especially if you don't have enough money to pay for the studies and so on, because in Germany it was all private and you had to pay, I think it was like something like 600 euros per month to attend. And that was a lot of money, especially for my family. We are not rich or something. And then I took a look around and found by coincidence over my cousin. He told me, okay, here in our city, they offer something called computer visualistics and design. And in this study, you could focus yourself on game design later on. And I started doing that. And I think in the second or third semester, I informed myself a little bit more about the gaming industry and so on. And I heard not a lot of good things, right?
Yeah, high end fire, you mean? And stuff.
Yeah, something like that, yes, but it wasn't that bad at that time, but especially stuff like salary or long working hours, bad
working conditions,
something like that, yes, all this stuff. And I'm a very family focused person. And then I decided, maybe not, maybe sometime later or something. And then I did something called UX design. I don't know if you people know what it is.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. User experience.
Yes, user experience design.
So it's more like graphical user interface design and stuff.
Yeah.
GUI design.
Yes, yeah. Yes, that's right. And I thought it was very interesting because it was based on a lot of data. So you gather data from users and so on. And according to that, you design something. It's not like you sit in a cell somewhere and design something and you don't know any data. And that was a very logic thing for me. And I liked it very much. And then I started doing that. And yeah, on sometime, I think it was 2019, I started work. Then I changed again. Now I'm like product owner. It's a role in Scrum. I don't know if you heard of it.
Oh yes.
Yeah. It's like yeah, you're like the people lead of a small Scrum team and design a product more or less. And through my hobby, like gaming still is my hobby, I got to know Max, like the owner of Soul Potion. And by coincidence also, I talked to him about like his hobbies and so on Discord. And he told me that he is currently studying game design and so on. And I was like, well, what? Really? I was completely focused. Okay, tell me more. Because I didn't have a chance to do it and so on. And then I think after 2 years or something knowing him, I proposed to him, hey, let's do a small project together just for fun, no? Just to get something for your resume later on, something like that. But we never thought it will be that big, to be honest. Yeah.
Okay. So the end idea is the game will be a smash hit and you will do game design for a living in the end.
Ooh, yeah, would be cool. But I will stay realistic until I see some first numbers.
May I ask, how did you get in touch with Ensemble? I mean, they did a few other stuff like publishing the Larry games, the new ones and stuff.
It was, we got a lot of offers actually. After we pushed the game to itch.io, I think, first
yeah,
time.
Everything itch.io. Is on itch.io.
Yeah, we were on the front page a long time, and we had a lot of great feedback and so on, and a lot of companies contacted us, but most of them were not, like all of them except Assemble, were not in Germany, and we wanted to have like a more close contact to our publishers, and like with native language everything is easier and so on. And also the people behind Ensemble, I knew them from like old games and so on, like the founder of Ensemble, I forgot his name, sorry. But he's like a big personality in the German gaming industry and so on.
That's something
like you trust in that, right? But if, I don't know, a foreign company contacts you, never heard of them. Of course, I investigated a lot of offers and so on. And
I don't know.
I didn't find anything which suited us.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, nice. Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, I played the game at. It's one of the few games at the beginning that I played wrong. I actually thought it would be more like a defend yourself game. And then I figured out I was losing all the time. And then I was like, oh no, you have to actually run around and try to shoot as many people as possible and so on. And it's you actually have to constant be on the move to not be attacked. And that's like, I figured you don't have much time to think about a strategy. It's more like react.
Yeah, it's maybe I'll just explain where the idea came from. Of course, some of you know Vampire Survivors, which I think released 2 years ago or something. And it was a little bit of a small revolution because it's a game with not very good graphics or something. I think the creator just bought a lot of asset packs, put them together into a game, and that's it. But of course, there are more layers to it. So you have a psychological layer where you can see, okay, he has something like loot boxes where you see all flashy stuff, which is, of course, for the brain, something very special and stuff like that. And you notice, okay, if I play this game, the time runs fast, right? I get a lot of rewards all the time. It feels good somehow, even though it doesn't look good or something. It doesn't have like very deep mechanics or something. You just walk around and shoot automatically. That's it, right? And then you had some clones, I would say, of the game, which were all also very successful, like Brotato, for example. And we were just thinking, we were not thinking with okay, we want to have big money success or something, right? It was just the idea, okay, let's try to create that. So it looks easy to do, right? To create on a code basis that stuff. And then we combine something we like with it. And the first attempt was Greek mythology, like the theme. And then I did a lot of research, like looking for item names in the Greek mythology and so on, stuff like that. And then I sat together with Max and he told me, okay, I don't feel the Greek mythology too much. I like more the Norse mythology because a lot of people watched Vikings, maybe, the TV show, right? And we were very interested in that and so on. So we did the whole change of the thematic. But in the end, we gave a lot of feedback of on the game because we start and some people didn't even know they could dodge, for example, right? Mm-hmm. And even though it's the space bar, but well, that's a very interesting thing from UX perspective that people doesn't know.
Yeah, like I said, I approached the game like any other game and it totally failed. I was like, oh my God, I'm so bad.
Yeah, the genre is very specific because you have you need to die in order to become more powerful, right? It's like the roguelite element. Every game is every run is like your survival. You just need to survive as long as you can, gather experience so you can power up your character, and the next run will be easier in the beginning and you get further and further and so on.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. One thing I have to admit, and I'm still not sure, is the game style more pixel graphic or is it more modern or is it something in between? That's something I didn't figure out yet, because when I look at the screenshots, it's looking more like cute pixel graphics. But when I play, it didn't feel so much like that.
I think I know why. Yes, it's pixel art, and Max did it all by himself. He just used, I think, Sprite. I think it's called Sprite with a pixel program, so where he just paints all the sprites and so on and makes a move. But I think the feeling of the modern feeling comes from the animations and so on, because you have a lot of effects and so on the screen. And in the old games, I don't know, Space Invaders or something like that, which may be a little bit similar or something, you don't have a lot of fancy effects on the screen, and that's maybe the modern touch.
I mean it's good, because in the recent 5 years you had a lot of game designers like, let's make the graphic as ugly as possible because people like retro, you know. And I'm like, and then you had like I had like 5-10 jump and run games, all with pixel graphic every month or something. And I was like, So it's actually good that you mix the techniques and not try to copy and paste something.
No, the pixel style, I think, in the last 10 years or something, was used a lot just because people from that era, from the 90s and so on, who played all the pixel games, are now in an age, okay, we need to feel young again. I don't know, let's try it again.
Right.
If you have also very modern pixel style, like, I don't know if you know Octopath Traveler, the game from Squaresoft or Square Enix, sorry. It's like, it's mixing pixel art with 3D optics. Looks very cool also. So you can do a lot of stuff with pixel art. So.
Oh yes, gets old. I mean, we once had Ron Gilbert talk about Thimbleweed Park, which is also a pixel graphic point-click adventure, and they also introduced new techniques like shadow and light effects on the pixel graphic. Wow. Okay, so you can do a lot of stuff with the old thing.
In a game like this, where it's kind of top down, you're looking at, there could be a lot of stuff happening on the field at any given time. The kind of simplistic pixel graphics sort of make it easy to figure out, you know, see what's what, make it easy to discern, you know, this is, you know, this thing coming at you versus something else. And
yeah, on that topic, what's what and the visual distinction, we also, I think we still have some problems there because we use a lot of red. Right?
Yeah, I noticed that. Just wanted to say, very poppy colors. Yeah.
But we also, the enemies drop like the blood pixel things, blood orbs, and so on. And you have a lot of it. So Max developed like an algorithm where they gathered together into one blob because of performance also, but also visual clutter and so on. So you also need to be very careful with pixel stuff because you don't have this 3D layer to distinguish it. So we need to be also aware of the colors we use and so on.
Right. Reminds me a bit of Lemmings. When you were nasty and had like 99 lemmings on the screen, and then you click that one button to nuke them all, and then when all lemmings pop, the old PCs went down and everything was going slow, something like that, right? That's interesting. I never thought performance would be an issue because people think like, old graphic style, that's probably like no system requirements at all.
You can't think like that because on that screen happens a lot. You have a lot of single units which run around, which also have a behavior program, how to run and so on. If everything explodes, right, you have to draw a lot of particles and pixels and so on the screen. So it's also performance heavy, but of course you can optimize it with stuff in the background like clustering stuff and so on. And
I learned that with Minecraft. I was actually surprised how much performance blocky graphics can eat.
Minecraft is also, that's why Minecraft uses the chunking mechanic. If you go through the world, right, and then another chunk is loaded in and so on. So because I think they render 64 or something blocks in front of you, behind you, above you and underneath you. And that's also, of course, performance heavy because you have caves underneath and so on. So performance is a very important thing also for us. Yeah.
So the reason why you went with color is because it's evil and horror and kind of gore. So it's
the red color.
It
should be gory. I don't know. Did you watch the Viking series?
No, I didn't.
No, okay, you should do that. But it was very cool because it was very historic correct as far as we know, right? But it was also very gory, right? So they didn't censor a lot of stuff. Like there is also a ritual called Blood Eagle. I don't go into detail, but it's very gory. And we also have like thought about having a skill like that, a skill point like that and so on. That's why we wanted to have it cute pixel, but with gory elements and so on. I don't know if later on we implement something like dismemberment of enemies or something. Right now it's, of course, I pitched the idea multiple times, but you have to draw everything, right? Max has to draw everything, every body part and so on, if we want to have something like that. So maybe later on.
So you mentioned Max drawing a lot and also coding, I guess. Yeah. So what is your part actually?
Yeah, we sit together and he sometimes struggles with like ideas for skills, ideas for general systems. Like, for example, we have a skill tree in the game, which was initially my idea because the other games, survivor likes, I call them, right? Like Vampire Survivors and so on, they don't have that persistent element like a skill tree, which you could maybe change. Also, an idea in the early stages was something like, okay, we have a big skill tree and we would like to export the skill tree. So other users in the community can also import it into their game.
Interesting.
And share builds like that, for example. Like this is one thing. And like all the systems which you currently see are like mostly out of my head, of course, with refinement from Max and so on. And this is basically the idea. So also I'm also like a motivational factor for Max because it's very difficult as a solo dev to keep on working, right? To finish something. I know it from also my own experience. I tried a lot of stuff in my free time with game development, right? I started very motivated 2 weeks. Let's learn Unity. Let's do my first, side scroller or something. And one day I'm like, let's play League of Legends or something. I'm gone. So it's very difficult to stay motivated, and it helps to have someone who pushes you, right?
But I mean, as you are also on Steam, isn't the Steam community pushing already? I mean, when I look at the Steam community and all these coming soon games, and everybody is like, oh no, not another coming soon game.
Yeah, early access has a very contradicting picture in the community, because on the one side, the general idea of early access was to gather user feedback and change systems on the drawing board, not patch them later on or something, like shape the game with your community. This was the basic idea. But of course, there are a lot of companies and so on which use this status, the specific status, just to gather money and stay in the status and use it as an excuse, right?
Some games are in this status since 9 years and longer.
Yeah, something like that. And then the excuse will always be, okay, it's early access, it can be buggy. Right. The best form of early access, maybe you heard, like Baldur's Gate 3, for example. It was, I think, three or four years or something in early access, and the community shaped the whole game together with Larian Studios, and it's a masterpiece right now. So that is how it should be done, right?
Let's hope Star Citizen will also be a masterpiece, because it's also early access, and some people say it will never be done at all.
Yeah, I for my part, I stopped buying early access games because I don't want to start an early access game, even if it's good, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to start it. And then after a year or something, if in the best case it is done by then, they added like tons of stuff. I don't like revisiting games that much because
I saw the whole part, right?
All right. And then I need to do the first part again because I'm out of
loop. Exactly.
I don't like that. I just wait right now until it's done. I also do the same stuff with AAA games nowadays, something like Assassin's Creed or something. If it releases, okay, it's a great game. After 2 or 3 years, they add a lot of DLCs and stuff like that, which may be interesting, but I don't push myself to do it all over again because they are like 70-hour games or something.
Right.
So I just wait.
Right.
Doesn't run away. So
that's interesting. Is that the reason why you made a totally separated entry and called it Origins instead of making it Argot's Fall and then just making a button saying demo like most people do?
To be honest, it was a suggestion from our publisher to do it like that, because they, in the past, they had experience with that. Also, there are like other games who did it like that. I don't know any off the top of my head, but it was successful for them. So we figured, okay, why don't we do this? So I don't know about the technicalities with Steam, with the demo stuff and so on. Mm-hmm. I know why. We used the Unity engine for the demo, and for the full release, we used the Game Maker engine. And I think you couldn't put both versions in one branch in Steam. That was the problem. So I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But I think that was the thing, the topic variant.
I mean, it's also helping because the way you advertise it, you say it's free, play, it's a free game, but then in the end you are like, okay, if you want to experience more of that, wait till we release the final version. And I guess once the final version is out, you can make the Origins release obsolete, kind of.
I guess so, because you don't get the progression from the origin stuff, because the game will be a lot of different systems and so on. Maybe the systems you see now in the demo are not really in the final version anymore or in another shape. So we don't give the people all the progress they did there. It's just for a general idea. People like survival likes. They give us like feedback. For example, we have a lot of great feedback also on Steam, on different pages and so on. So we have a lot of work in front of us to make it better. But in the end, it's about having an identity, right? Because we didn't want to copy paste. Of course, we could just take Vampire Survivors, put a skin on it and ship it, right? And then hope for the best. But
hope not to be sued in any way.
No. A lot of people do that stuff. I think I watched a YouTube video on someone who who earns a good amount of money just by reskinning. How is it called? Vier Gewinnt on English.
Connect Four.
Yeah, this one with like autumn theme or like Halloween theme. I don't know, Christmas theme. Right.
Or Monopoly is also a classic
example. Yeah, but for that you need a license.
but that is more like in the board game area where you have like tons of board game versions of Monopoly.
I get your idea.
Yeah. Well, as I said, first time I played it totally wrong because I'm obviously not experienced in the survival genre, so yeah, wonderful. Yeah, but I see you have achievements regardless in Steam, because I got an achievement saying take your time, spend more than a minute in the level up menu.
Yeah, of course, achievements will also be part of, like, every Steam game has to have achievements, right? So a lot of people collect them. I remember back in the day when they first came, I think it was Xbox who did it first, or Microsoft in that case, and the Xbox 360. And at that time, when I was younger, I was also, digital points which go up. I need that. But right now, I don't really care, but a lot of people care. So
that and cloud saving is also important.
Also, like a regular Steam thing nowadays, you have to have that, because if you, I don't know, change your computer or something, it will be very bad experience if all will be gone. So
I mean, you have already a very busy discussion board in your game at Steam, so seems to be very much welcomed by the community, which is nice, because especially nowadays, as you said, itch.io and Steam, everybody is on those platforms, so it's kind of difficult to stand out of the crowd.
We hope that with our theme, like this Viking theme, we drag a lot of attention, because like a lot of people like that theme, right? Also our audience likes it, and I think also with stuff like maybe it's a little bit of a side effect, but with Assassin's Creed Valhalla taking place
in the
Viking world and stuff like that, people get to know it much better. Also God of War, the new ones, Ragnarok and so on, also very popular games, people like that theme, so we hope for the best, right? So
yeah, definitely. Yeah. Awesome. So, any plans for portable consoles like Switch?
Not right now, but it will be, it is a possibility. It's not that difficult to do, to be honest. Also, for a game like this, I think Asgard's Fall on the Switch would be also very cool, right? It's a small game. You could play for 5 minutes, put it away on the couch or whatever. So, but of course, it's still effort. You need time to do that anyways. And I think with the help of our publisher, we could also do that or could do it by ourselves also, because it depends a little bit on the game engine, right? I'm not quite sure if Game Maker supports it from the get-go. I don't think so, Unity did. Maybe I should explain. I don't know if you heard about this whole Unity thing.
Oh, yes. A whole shit show. Oh, my God. Yeah.
In the end of last year, Unity decided to do something very stupid, change the whole payment model and so on.
And then change it back afterwards and think, sorry, guys, it will not ever happen again.
Yeah, the trust is gone, but it was not the best move they could make. They lost a lot of people who use the Unity engine. And right now we are pretty satisfied with Game Maker because of Unity fucked up, right? They moved a lot of resources to Game Maker and Godot and the other engines, right?
Oh yeah, I heard good stuff about Godot as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's our choice engine right now. GameMaker, it's very good for pixel style games, for 2D games, and we have a very good roadmap for the engine. So the only thing is the UI, right? The UI system in GameMaker is not as good as in Unity, but I think they are working on it right now. But still, it's a very small obstacle. The other things are very good. You have way better performance in GameMaker and so on. So,
Yeah, unfortunately, the entry of the full version is also one of those games that just says 2024. Not, you don't have a distinctive release date in mind right now.
No. Okay. You can't have that because we are not like a very full-time big company, and also not full time, of course. But if you say something like, I don't know, the 15th of June or something, a lot of people count on it, and then we need to delay. And that's bad news, blah, blah, blah. We just want to have that freedom. But we certainly aim for 2024, but more of a later half, right?
Right. Before Christmas.
We hope so, yeah. Would be great. Because also, while working on Asgard's Fall, Max especially gathered a lot of experience using the engine and so on. And he thinks now back 3 months ago, I could do that much better right now, and so on. And he just wants to start a new project, right? And I need to remind him, let's finish that one first, we just need to finish it, and then it will be done, and so on. Then we can put all our gathered experience from the last 2 years or something. No, wait a second.
I mean,
1 year.
I mean, you don't want to end up like Duke Nukem Forever that took 14 years to complete because they were changing the engine 3 times. Jeez. Like, woo!
That should be because I think we don't really have this patience to develop something for that long. Doesn't make any sense because, we have also lives. We don't want to do that for 13 years or something.
Awesome.
And it will be a smaller project next time because we underestimated it a little bit, especially in regards of balancing and so on. Or don't ask, balancing with this much abilities and so on, it's a pain. You have like spreadsheets everywhere. You need to think of formulas, how to handle damage, how to handle experience gains and so on. So it just needs to make sense because you need to specific pacing, right? You can't just, I'm the overlord god level 1 and I just squash the whole screen. That's not really fun. Maybe the first
you
time.
You need some challenge that is progressing over time. Yeah.
Yes, and this is especially difficult. So I can understand if some AAA companies have whole departments for balancing. It's just mathematics all the way. So,
Or you go like Cyberpunk, you delay, and then you still release something that barely works.
Yeah, but that's more of an issue of publishing and stakeholders and so on. Because if you have people who are not really interested in games, they just put their money into the companies and they want to have money after 3 or 4 years. Yeah, sometimes you have to release. So that's the topic a lot of casual gamers don't understand because they just hate, right? Delay, they fucked up the game, blah, 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 blah. But in the background, people have to like pay money to other people and so on. And I know the decision in the end came from the studio heads to go to the market and sell the shares of a company and so on. Because you also earn a lot of money for that, that's for sure, right? But I think now the movement is more like stay independent, right? Be your own chef and just try to have a wholesome community and stuff like that. I don't know if you heard of the III incentive. I think it was something like a presentation last week or something where tons of indie developers put together like a show. I think 1 hour or something, only with game trailers for indie games, right? Mm-hmm. because they don't really want to have a big publisher behind them, AAA, Ubisoft stuff and so on, only focus on indie games. A lot of people lost their trust in AAA development, or quadruple A. I don't know if you heard Skull and Bones from Ubisoft.
Oh, yes. A. Whoa. Yeah. That's actually wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, these games are getting more expensive, like 80 euros, 90 euros, and so on. And I can also understand that, because the development is also expensive with actors, motion capture, and so on. It's like a Hollywood production nowadays.
It's not even the only example. I mean, especially for Germans, you probably heard about the Siedler, which is in English The Settlers. And Ubisoft was totally not listening to their fans and going in the wrong direction with the game, then totally stopping releasing the game just to pause it a year, change a few things, and then release it anyway. And it still turned out not very good.
Yeah, I think the initial founder of the Settler games, he did his own thing.
Right.
Forgot. Pagonia something, but
exactly
it was also not that successful, so I'm not sure. I think people moved on a little bit because you have this nostalgia factor from
when
was Settlers 2, I think 1999 or something,
1996 I think it was.
Oh, 1996, okay,
or something.
Yeah, I remember. I have also fond memories of it, but to bring that stuff back to modern days where you have a lot of expectations nowadays, quality of life features and so on, you can't really capture this nostalgia spirit, so it's not that easy.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess the problem was also they wanted to focus more on real-time strategy, on fighting and stuff, and it was like Settler was never about fighting other regions and other armies, so it's...
No, I remember they spit themselves, so I think they spit the enemies all the time, spat at them, and they didn't really swing the sword. It was spitting in the faces.
Yeah.
But,
I also see, in the screenshots right now, you not only have a lot of red, but also a lot of blue, like the blue tree.
It's more about harmonic colors and so on. What we try to do is with the theme of a game, it shouldn't be just a Viking skin. Hey, we have a bearded guy who swings the axe and we kill some Norse gods, that's it.
Not like the title screen graphic, because that's exactly what it looks like. You have this Viking with the long beard and stuff.
Yeah, sure. It's that main character right now. But what I try is naming the skills in a way that is also like in the mythology somewhere connected to something, right? If you have, for example, an ice skill, I call it, for example, Ymir's breath. Like Ymir is the ice giant who created the world in Norse mythology and so on. So it's always connected to some mythological facts, like all the quotes, right?
Wow.
So
nice.
Also later on, you will have the different realms, right? Right. You start on Midgard. This is like the first level. It's the equivalent of Earth, right? And later on, you have like Muspelheim, which is like the volcanic area. You have Asgard later on, where like the godly realm and so on. So it will be connected. There's a little bit of something for like the mythological fans, right? For the Norse mythology fans. I think it will be very cool. You have like the world tree Yggdrasil, which is like our menu, right? And so on. So yeah, we try to figure it out.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful. So, can you tell us a bit about what you plan more for the final game that can't be seen in the demo? If it's not a secret, of course.
No, I can tell you some things. So, we are working, of course, more on the skill trees. For now, in the demo version, you have like one whole skill tree, a physical one. We have also like one for the fire skills, the ice skills, like utility skills and so on, which were just partly there, right? But everything will be subject to change, of course. We are currently working on the skill nodes, right? Which skills are inside them and so on. We want to squish it down a little bit because we figured that the small nodes, which are just stat increases, like, I don't know, plus 3 attack damage or something, are not very interesting, right? You click on it, okay, you don't really feel the impact. And we wanted to have something like, okay, I invest my time into a skill point, and it should feel different. That is the goal right now we're trying to achieve. So you will have like refurbished skill trees for every like fire, ice, and so on. And also another thing, which is also like the groundwork is laid for, it's called Web of Würd. Don't ask about the name. It's like mythological things. And in every run, you have like hexagonal shapes. It's like, can't describe it like very good. It's, you know, how is it called? The beehive things where the honey is stored, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So you have something like that, and you could, you get like random knots, like, and put them inside them. So they interact with each other for everyone different. And this is also a system which will take place. Also, we implement resources. So you gather resources in the runs, for example, something like fire essence, right? And with fire essence, you could unlock fire skill nodes for your skill tree, something like that. So you can farm that resources in different runs and craft your skill trees like that. And also, we want to make the map a little bit bigger because right now it's very condensed on one space. And
yeah,
we just figured, okay, it's not that interesting to run in a circle all the time because this is what you do at the end right now. It's the best strategy because of the enemy AI. They just follow you. They are not very smart, right? They don't circle around or something.
Yeah.
That's why you could just run in a circle and easy does it, right? But we want to make it a little bit bigger, more lively, maybe put some objectives on the map and so on to do something. Later on, we also want to have multiple characters. Actually, have different characters which behave in a different way, like a berserker, which is, I don't know, very fast, but gets is dealt more damage or something like that. Just random ideas, but different characters.
Where you actually make the bridge to retro gaming again, because there was a game called Berserk in the 80s.
I don't know that one. Well, maybe I know it.
It was actually famous because it had digital samples speech in it.
Ah, cool.
I didn't know that.
What we else want to have is like a weapon forging system where you could you have, for example, your axe or sword as this Viking on the title screen, right? And you could put different runes in it, right? And it would behave different because we figured the basic ability, if you start the game, you just swing a sword, right? And it feels obsolete after 2 minutes because you have
melee weapons. Everybody avoids them.
Yeah, yes, because you just shoot fire and lightning and ice and so on. Why should you swing the sword, right? Yeah. And we figured, okay, we need to give it more impact. And that's why we thought about like a weapon forging system where you could put runes in it. So maybe if you swing the sword, you would fire something else or something, or you have a wider swing or whatever, right? Additional effects. We also thought of an idea, why don't we get rid of a sword? But that's a little bit weird because a Viking, which is just hauling magic here and there, feels not that sound. So that's why, okay, we still need this weapon, and let's think about the system we could implement with that. I think I forget some things which will come also. But of course, you would have the 9 realms, right? Which is footed in the Norse mythology and so on. Boss fights. You have one boss fight already in the demo, but it's just a demo boss fight. It's not, doesn't really fit the theme in Midgard and so on. It just, we tried something out to make something a little bit more interesting or something. But in the end, it will be something different, I guess. Also, I think we will play a lot around with modes, different modes or something. That was also a thing we struggled at the beginning. We had like an endless mode. I think it's dealing with demo, I'm not sure right now, where you just could rush through all the time and you didn't have a time counter and so on. And for some people, it's okay. For other people who just want to have an end at some time, it's not okay. So
yeah, I think as a game designer, you also have to be careful. I remember like 5 years ago when we were invited to product presentations, every game, even fighting games and so on, had story modes.
Yeah,
you had like Street Fighter clones. We are a fighting RPG because it has a story mode, but in the end, it's just a fighting game.
Street Fighter, the newest one has it also. I think some people like it. I guess mostly the casual people like it.
Yeah.
For games like this, for Street Fighter, it's very difficult to gather new audiences. Because Street Fighter is a complex game at its heart. You have to memorize all the combos and so on. And people don't want to invest the time to do that. That's why they thought of alternative control scheme, for example. I don't know if you played Super Smash Brothers.
But I played Tekken. And when you play the first Tekken game, they actually ask you, do you want to get the easy mode for controlling? Where the AI helps you to execute the combos for the special moves and attacks and stuff.
It's, for example, in Super Smash Bros., you have a free-flowing combat system where you could just, you have like the A button to do a basic attack and all the directional inputs and so on. And you could combo yourself. You don't need to memorize, okay, up, down, left, right, A. And when I do something, you just do it. And this is why I always preferred games like this over something like Tekken or Soul Calibur or Street Fighter or whatever, because I didn't like to memorize. I didn't try the newest Street Fighter with this new control scheme, but it sounded very good. I was close to buying it, but I figured I have so much games on my pile of shame, which are still to be played.
I also never finish games. I'm also not a person to finish games. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's very difficult, especially if you are an adult. You have a lot of money, but not a lot of time.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned leveling up and skill system and so on. I think you also have to be careful to not make it too complex, because many games have like an upgrade and skill leveling system. And I remember at the moment I'm also playing a lot of RoboCop Rogue City, and I was like, are you kidding me? Full screen of decisions of how to combine, how to make combos of different skills, and sometimes the different skill combinations even cause other skills to go weaker, so go negative and stuff. I think you have to be very careful there to not make it too complicated.
I also thought about that, because if you have a lot of systems which don't really interlace that good with each other, you would run into problems, because you have to have a specific synergy with the system, so it draws a whole picture. But I think we will listen to a lot of feedback if that stuff comes out and adapt according to it. That's because I would like to have more than less, right? And then I could just cut down the more, right? I have a lot of options you can choose from, and people say, okay, I like that that much, but not that one. So I can say, okay, we get rid of that one, maybe we enhance the other one. But if you only have one system, people will be okay, that sucks, right? Or there will be, okay, you could add that, like tons of ideas, and it will become very difficult to pick something. So yeah, let's see how it turns out when it comes out.
Awesome.
Yeah. Where can people go to find out about this?
Ask Us For All. We have currently a website making. Let me see if it's already online. Also, you could just go onto Steam, type in Ask Us For All, and you are set. Then you can take a look at the game, the community app, see what people think about it. I think right now it sits at, let me check, very positive. Whoa.
Whoa, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's very positive. I think we have like over 20,000 wish lists right now.
Which wow. Is
very good. Yes, we are very surprised about it. Yeah, you have to imagine we are like two boys just playing video games when we decide, hey, let's do something fun. Okay, and yeah, it turns out like that. Big publisher contacts us. We were like, oh, flabbergasted. Well, what should we do? Of course, I checked everything. Okay, how to behave, what to think of when you talk with publishers. Because for gamers, you hear a publisher, you associate some bad people behind it. Because, okay, they're like only money-making machines or something like that, right?
Yeah, it actually depends. I mean... I was doing once an interview with Francisco Gonzalez, which is actually known in the indie scene for his adventure games. And he actually, despite he is American, he went as with a publisher with Heidelberg Applications. And it was like, why are you going with a German publisher? And he said, like, in the interview, like, yeah, because I like their way of handling the publishing and giving me the freedom of making my games the way I want them to be and stuff. So
that was also a thing we held in high regard with Assemble. They offered us, like, multiple modes, right? For example, they could pay us a salary to work full-time on it and so on. But that would mean less flexibility for us. Because when we need to commit for it, right, to full time, and you have a proper milestone plan and so on, it will be a little bit more stressful. So we said, okay, we want to do it in our own pace. We don't need any of your money. Mm-hmm. You don't need to invest anything. You just need to do the PR work and so on, like organize some events, stuff like that.
Or this interview and stuff, yeah.
For example, right. And that's the thing they do. And turns out it works pretty fine, I guess.
Wonderful, yeah. It's interesting because in the email before this interview is that you don't know if we actually can make an hour, and now we spoke about it an hour and 4 minutes, so we made it.
Woo, normally,
achievement unlocked, yeah.
Yes. Normally, I'm used to like a structured interview. You have like a set of questions, right? And you just answer them, and it's pretty much done. But we are just free flowing.
We are just talking. That's the way we are doing it.
Yeah. I sent you a link here for the website. You can take a look.
Awesome. Yeah, we will put that in the podcast description, of course.
Also, you can see the logo of a company on the web page. So
awesome. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. I mean, it will be. Since the last episode of April will be released tomorrow, because it's the last day of April, this interview will actually be pretty early in May. So it's actually perfect timing. So
then I can cringe on my voice. I think it's a long time ago that I heard my own voice on an external media somewhere. Well, let's see about that.
Ah, wonderful. Yeah. Anything from your side, AJ?
Nope, I'm good.
Wonderful. Yeah, this went butter smooth.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. I did my best. I thought I was a little bit rusty with my English skills, my spoken language skills. But,
No problem at all. That's our number one task, to convince our guest there the English is fine.
So you have to say it. Oh, okay.
Sometimes, it depends, you know. Yeah, I mean, we had a few cases like where one person was like, we can only do the interview when my family is not in the house because I don't want anybody else to listen to my English. I was like, okay.
Nah, I just closed my door. That's it.
wonderful. All right.
Thank you for sitting with us.
Awesome. Yeah. So I will let you know when we release this, of course, and I will also let Ensemble know. So, right, and then let's see what the audience thinks of this interview. But it was very interesting to hear the perspective of somebody who does this as a hobby, as an entry point in the video game industry.
Yeah, yeah. It is fun. Sometimes you have to motivate yourself, right, to stay on the topic and so on. We are organized with Notion. I don't know if you heard it. It's a very cool website where you can organize projects and so on. It's free.
Is it a bit like Trello?
Yes, it's a little bit like Trello, but I think it's more capable and also free. I was very surprised that stuff is free. I was like, what? Why don't you want money for that? Because in my professional life, I use Jira, Confluence, and so on. So
oh, yes.
All
yeah,
that
me
stuff,
too.
Right?
Me too.
Because yeah. It's like very expensive.
Oh, right? My God. Yeah.
Yeah, but that stuff is just for free. And I was like, what? Okay, I take it.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, thanks a lot. So, was this your first interview? Because you mentioned during the interview you don't listen to your own voice a lot.
Yes, it was my first interview
for this
okay. project. I did like some fewer ones, I don't know, years ago for other stuff, right?
Wow.
But, that's some time ago. But maybe this interview stuff will happen much more in the future. Who knows?
Yeah.
We will also be on the Gamescom in August.
We also. Nice.
Ah, maybe we see each other, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
So,
sure.
Yeah, we wanted to have like a small place where we could present the game and talk to other developers and so on.
Awesome, yeah. I will talk to Ensemble if we can make a follow-up appointment, perhaps, yeah.
Maybe after it's released.
We will be at Gamescom with our Disc Mac. So we always have a booth with our Disc Mac in the retro area of Gamescom at Family and Friends. And that is why we are at Gamescom. And then it was like, wow, if we already present our Disc Mac, why don't we make appointments in the business area as well and then talk to all the publishers, you know, and what they have coming up, you know.
That's the best opportunity, I think, in Gamescom. So if you see a 2 meter tall red-haired guy, it's me.
Wow, okay. So I have to look up to you then.
Yes. I think I will be one of the biggest guys there, but so
wow.
Easier to find.
Awesome. So thanks a lot. And I could say already Germany, good night.
Yeah.
Right?
Almost,
it's getting late.
A little bit of gaming to do for me, but I need to do research, you know, research.
Yeah. Right. Viking mythology. Yeah. Research and stuff.
For example, awesome. I play Valhalla, Assassin's Creed Valhalla, so it's awesome. Research.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Have a nice one.
Thanks, too.
Bye-bye.
You too. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.